I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 31st of May. We're going to do an all things political this hour, as yesterday was Memorial Day. We were on tapes doing shows that reflected the somber nature of yesterday, and today we thought we would do an all things political because we missed it yesterday. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to be looking, of course, at the presidential race. There have been news reports that everybody thought this would be an easy race for Hillary Clinton, but anxiety is beginning to take hold in the Democratic Party that she is struggling to find her footing. There are some recommendations that she push ahead with a different kind of campaign. People in the Democratic Party, many of them, say a more provocative approach is needed. John Burton, who is chair of the California Democratic Party, said about Donald Trump, you could run the old LBJ ad against Goldwater with a hydrogen bomb blowing up with a little girl who is counting daisies, and that might be more appropriate for this kind of a race. We'll be talking about the Washington Post editorial, which was pretty scathing and titled Clinton's Inexcusable Willful Disregard for the Rules. Scott Walker, under orders from a judge, the governor of the state released emails showing that he wanted to simplify guiding principles for state universities as part of a sweeping higher education proposal that would have dropped the Wisconsin idea from the mission statement. The emails show that his office had been told about the proposed changes before they were formally introduced. We will talk about that. And we'll talk a little bit about migration. The horrible stories continue of people who are dying on these rickety boats, all of these migrants. 1,000, as many as 1,000 people just last week. And there is an interesting story in the front page of the New York Times today that nearly 8 months into an effort to resettle 10,000 Syrian refugees in this country, the administration has admitted just over 2,500. The president's going to be having a summit meeting on refugees in September during the UN General Assembly. And some are saying around the world it's time for U.S. leadership to counteract a backlash against refugees. So those are a few of the areas we'll be discussing this hour and welcoming your phone calls for Professor Kathleen Dolan. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well. Kathleen Dolan is professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Her research focuses on gender politics, public opinion, elections, and voting behavior. She is the author of When Does Gender Matter? Women Candidates and Gender Stereotypes in American Elections and Voting for Women, How the Public Evaluates Women Candidates. Professor Kathleen Dolan, nice to have you with us again. Hi.
Nice to be here.
Let's talk about the nature of the campaign. Democrats getting worried that Hillary Clinton is running a campaign against Trump that is similar to the way that the Democrats ran against Mitt Romney in 2012, and it just simply doesn't work, that this guy has been saying some pretty outrageous things, and it's time for a very direct and a very maybe outrageous campaign against him.
Yes, you're right that there are some Democrats who are starting to become worried about how Secretary Clinton can defeat Donald Trump in the fall. That comes, as you say, from the sort of all bets are off nature of his campaign. I certainly think that people around Secretary Clinton might suggest that the strategy that's being proposed would be sort of sinking to the same level as Donald Trump. I don't think that's her personality. I don't think that's her persona. I'm not sure that encouraging candidates to adopt strategies that are completely antithetical to who they are would be particularly successful. You know, we certainly can't sort of reboot who she is as a person and a personality. But at the same time, you know, I think the Democrats have to worry that they don't panic too much. You know, this is certainly going to be a different campaign than we generally see, but I don't know that we can safely say that the only way to be successful is to do things completely differently. I mean, there are lots of things we know about how elections work and how campaigns work, and we don't necessarily want to get rid of all of those, you know, sort of tried and true ways of winning voters just because of Donald Trump.
It's almost as though they're just walking on different paths completely when he's running a campaign accusing her husband of rape, when he's talking about, you know, torture and what he said about Muslims and the wall, et cetera. What do you do with those kinds of comments? Do you just ignore them and try to get him on other kinds of issues, or you ignore him completely and talk about what you believe in?
Well, I don't think that you can get him on the issues. You know, I mean, I don't think that, I think she has to decide what her strategy is and at some level stick with it. She, of course, is going to have to, you know, make changes as things, time goes on. But I'm not sure that engaging him directly and trying to assume that she can get him to talk about a policy-oriented campaign is going to be terribly successful. I think she has to guard against being sucked down the road of some of the more sort of salacious and kind of outrageous things that he says. We know that candidates do have to sort of rebut some negative things, you know, that are thrown at them. They can't just stand, you know, mutely and not dispute charges, because voters seem to like to hear the pushback. But I do think that she has to articulate her own vision. I think that she can certainly articulate concerns about the kind of president he would be, about the sort of, you know, particularly egregious gutter nature of the campaign that many are expecting this year. And I think she can ask the American people to think about who we are as a nation and what kind of campaign we want and what that says about a presidency. But I don't know that she's going to have much success in anything that will structure his behavior.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you use the phrase the gutter nature of this campaign. It certainly is more gutter nature than any campaign I can remember in my lifetime. But I wonder, historically, is this a particularly bad gutter campaign? Have there been others?
Well, there's certainly, I mean, you know, one thing that historians do always try to remind us is, you know, we think of the past as, you know, some sort of, you know, pristine, you know, Right. Almost like angelic political world, and that's certainly not the case. I mean, we can go back through history, and there are lots of examples of, you know, quite pointed and quite direct and quite personal attacks. So I don't think that we are coming from a snowy, pure white history. But I do think that this campaign feels, at least so far, like it is sinking a little bit beneath the standards of kind of propriety and the standards of the way that the candidates engage with each other.
David Axelrod was quoted, I think, in the Washington Post over the weekend talking about Hillary Clinton as really an establishment kind of nominee, and that she needs to somehow embrace this need for change. Let me quote him and get your response to this. There's so much anger at the establishment, and it's hard for her to divorce herself from that because she's been a fixture on the scene for so long. It's important to speak to the sense of insecurity that's driving some Americans. I think she has to do that in a way that is authentic.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily disagree with him. I mean, the voter anger that Donald Trump seems to be tapping into does, you know, appear to be one of the more dramatic elements of this campaign. She certainly does need to be authentic. I think she does need to speak to people's kind of hopes and fears. But if this is going to be sort of, you know, an insider versus outsider campaign, there certainly is not much that she can do to change her resume at this point. But I think that focusing on the upsides of that experience and that ability to actually lead and to get things done. I mean, in some ways, you know, Donald Trump's campaign has been described by some people as, you know, sort of a giant temper tantrum. And so at some level, if she can be the sort of more reasonable, rational tonic to that, you know, whether it'll be successful or not, we don't know. But again, I don't think that modeling herself on his behavior or his approach is going to really work for her.
Let's talk about his being able to get this enormous amount of free airtime. Every time he says something outrageous, he gets airtime, and then he says something else outrageous and gets more airtime. Can he win a campaign? Will it be his strategy? Because he hasn't had a lot of success getting money from big Republican donors. They're a little worried about him. So he's not going to have anywhere near, it would appear, the $1 billion or more that she will have. Mm-hmm. Can he count on all of that free publicity, do you think, Kathleen?
Well, I think you would actually be better to answer that question than I would. It is true, and I think it is an indictment of our media that mm-hmm. everything he says is covered. I mean, last week or 2 weeks ago when he was flying into Washington and CNN had live coverage of his plane taxiing on the runway at National Airport, I mean, to me, I think that that shows, right, that he does have the media in the palm of his hands. So will he continue to get attention for everything he says? Absolutely, yes. Is that the media's fault? Is that a media problem? I think yes. So Donald Trump is not the creation simply of Donald Trump. I mean, he has been described as our first reality TV presidential candidate, and that's in part because of the way the media have allowed, you know, themselves, right, to be kind of brought into his strategy.
Mm-hmm. Donald Trump has been pulling even or ahead of Hillary Clinton in some recent national polls. Do you see a path for him to win this, considering the minority vote, what he said about Mexicans, what he said about Muslims, what he said about women, what he said about disabled people? I mean, the list goes on here. Mm-hmm. Is there a path for him, considering the way the electorate is changing in this country, for him to win this thing?
Well, again, you know, we don't know and we won't know. I would say that at this point, the national polls are really not things in which we should put much faith, despite the fact that people like us feel like this campaign is going on 24/7. The vast majority of Americans are not paying attention yet, really, to the campaign.
Aren't they?
No,
oh, my.
No, not
yeah.
really.
Yeah.
So, you know, head-to-head matchup polls right now are, you know, at some level hypothetical, and they are not really going to tell us much about what's going to happen in the fall. The other piece of it is that we have to remember that the president is elected through the Electoral College, and so it's not a question of who's ahead in national polls, but who's going to win votes on the grounds in the different states. So, you know, as the last several presidential elections have been in the United States, it's going to be about the battleground states. It's going to be about turnout. It's going to be about which campaign does a better job of getting its voters to the polls. It would seem in some ways like the demographic shifts in the United States should help a Democratic candidate, but we know that demographics are an important piece of it, but campaigns do matter, and they matter because we don't know who's going to turn out yet, and we don't know where those people are going to turn out. And so if, you know, we have good turnout among minority voters, among women voters, it certainly is going to help Secretary Clinton. But, you know, at this point, we just can't say.
Is her time best spent wooing Bernie Sanders voters after June 7? Well, she's going to get the nomination, but he may win California. Should she concentrate in that area, or should she concentrate on wooing moderate Republicans, or both?
Well, you know, she'll have to do some work on both. But one thing that we have to remember is, despite the fact that, you know, Bernie Sanders supporters want to sort of seem, you know, to be different than other primary voters in the past, we are in a very similar situation right now to where the Clinton and Obama camps were in 2008. I mean, in many ways, these primaries have played out in the reverse for Secretary Clinton, you know, in that she is the President Obama in this situation. You know, she's going to win the nomination. She may win the nomination losing the last several primaries, but it's not going to change the outcome. Her margin over Bernie Sanders will actually be significantly larger than the margin that President Obama had over her in 2008. And if you remember back then, there were all of those concerns about how could Clinton voters be brought into the fold and be, you know, gotten on the Obama bandwagon. So unless Senator Sanders supporters are a fundamentally different kind of people and different dynamics, then we can expect that at least the majority of them will vote for Secretary Clinton in the fall. One thing that is a little different this time is that Senator Sanders is not a Democrat, and some number of his voters are not members of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be a little harder to get them into the fold, as it were, if they were never in the fold to begin with. They may be people who would not vote, or they may vote for a third party candidate. But she will certainly work to get those voters, and she will certainly work to try to, you know, help them see that voting for the Democrat is the best way to stop Donald Trump, if that's their strategy. But she will do some of both. You know, she will work toward independent voters. There may be moderate Republican voters who can be peeled off. But, you know, again, that'll be more easy to see as the fall plays out.
Mm-hmm. We'll continue. We're going to talk about the Hillary Clinton emails, and we'll do that in a little while. Also, this story is so disturbing. We did this last summer when 3,700 migrants died in the Mediterranean, but 1,000 people died just last week in the Mediterranean on these rickety migrant ships. And there was an interesting piece in the paper today about the Syrian refugees. Remember when the president said that we were going to take in 10,000 Syrian refugees? So far, only 2,500 over, the president talked about that 8 months ago, 2,500 people have been admitted to this country. There's going to be a high-level summit meeting on refugees during a UN General Assembly. It's taking place in September. American leadership seems to be somewhat absent on this issue. Do we need more American leadership? And is it maybe purposeful because there's an anti-immigrant feeling in this country, too? We'll talk about that. We will talk about the Wisconsin idea and the emails that were released under orders from a judge that shows that Governor Scott Walker knew about deleting the Wisconsin idea from the mission statement of the University of Wisconsin, and other issues as well. So join us. We'd love to hear from you. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter at @KDunnShow. And you are listening to a Tuesday edition of All Things Political here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. Todd in Appleton is our first caller for you, Kathleen. Hi, Todd.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling in reference to the emotion that surrounds the election right now and the campaign coming in the fall. I have a feeling, I'm a senior citizen, so I've voted since the late 60s, and I have a feeling that a lot of folks have lost their knowledge or don't have a lot of knowledge of history and civics. I'm not so sure it's emphasized in our schools. Therefore, it's very, very easy for someone to get elected or be nominated who doesn't have a lot to offer, but yet appeals to people's emotions because they don't. A lot of folks are unable to go back and compare it to anything from the past and how our democracy is supposed to work and the Constitution as it really is. And they seem to be paying a lot more attention to the emotion of it rather than to sit down and think about it in the common sense. And that might have had, it might have a lot to do with our online the fighting online and all of the really negative stuff.
Professor Dolan, what do you think?
Well, you know, at some level, I would agree. I think that one of the challenges that we as political scientists face is to try to improve, right, what we might think of as our political culture. The caller is absolutely correct that Americans generally have relatively low levels of information about American politics. They also have relatively low levels of interest. I mean, one of the problems we have is getting people to be interested in politics and in what government is doing outside of elections, right? I mean, elections are as exciting as it gets, and that's when people tune in. And so we do have, in some ways, sort of an ongoing challenge of creating informed voters and informed citizens who are paying attention regularly so that they are not susceptible to, you know, some flash in the pan, kind of like, whoa, what's going on right now? Part of it is the responsibility of our schools, certainly, but I and other political scientists argue that part of it is the responsibility of families and, you know, other institutions in our culture. We have to create the political citizens that we want. You know, the process of political socialization is about teaching new generations of young people what the expectations of our system are. Those can't and probably shouldn't be all left to our schools. So families and schools and workplace and the media and institutions, you know, whether they're religious or civic organizations, I think, you know, they all have a role to play. We are somewhat successful at that, but I do think there are ways in which we could do much better.
Can you imagine, Todd, being, I've thought about this the last few weeks, a high school social studies or history teacher who's doing a current events unit on this election. What a difficult task that would be. And Professor Dolan, I'm interested in your response on this, too. People in the press struggle with how in the world to cover, particularly the Trump candidacy, what's been said and the comments that have been made. It's a very, very difficult thing to cover with some measure of whatever that word means in the press, objectivity. How would you do that? Todd, what do you think?
I would think that we would sit down and talk about basics and the way that our government is supposed to be set up. But most importantly, and what we have seemed to have forgotten, is that we are a self-governance nation. We are a democracy. And unlike any other kind of form of government, the people really, really have to know what's going on. And when you take your eye off the ball, things like this happen. And as far as presenting it to the kids in class, you have to say, the first thing you say is you have to take what people say as a grain of salt and look at the substance of what they're saying and how it applies to the future of the nation. I'm a little embarrassed when certain candidates speak because I'm a grandfather, and if my 9-year-old, who doesn't understand everything yet, granddaughter, doesn't if I have to have her ask her to leave the room because she can't listen to something because of the language, that's kind of a problem. Especially on a national candidate.
Professor Dolan.
Well, you know, Todd certainly does point to, as you and I had already spoken to, the sort of unique nature of this particular campaign. But to speak to your question about, you know, how we create those citizens, and particularly in schools, I do think that as our politics in general has become so much more partisan over the last, you know, 20, 30-odd years, as ideological differences have really, you know, continued to cement, I think that schools have a challenge, and I think some schools probably shy away from engaging in a lot of current events discussion because they worry about, you know, parents who might think, oh, you're too liberal, or oh, you're too conservative, or you're trying to indoctrinate my child. I teach here at UWM an Introduction to American Government and Politics class, and one of the things I do each semester is to ask students to think about their own political life and their own first political experience. And you may or may not be surprised at the number of students who have almost none of that when they come in. They were raised in families that never talk about politics.
Really?
I mean, the number of kids who cannot tell you what their parents believe or who their parents might support is not small. You have kids who come from Wisconsin high schools who say, we had an American government class, but it was very, you know, kind of basic structural sorts of things. We didn't talk about current events. You know, the teacher didn't want to get in trouble for sounding liberal or sounding conservative or whatever it is. I mean, and teachers rightly are not supposed to be indoctrinating students, but they could and should be exposing them to, you know, a range of arguments, a range of issues. But I do think there's some concern and some fear, you know, that they will be seen as ideological. And I think that hurts us because I think students, you know, end up being exposed to fewer ideas.
Well, there are also some ideas that need to be questioned, don't you think? No matter what you're...
Yes. I agree with that, and you agree with that, but I think you can envision a world, right? And Todd makes reference to the online, you know, flame wars, right? I mean, I think we can all envision a world in which there are lots of people who say different ideas are not up for dispute. So, I mean, even if you take an idea like, you know, climate change, and you say, you know, there are different sides of this issue. There, you know, people, some people say this, some people say that. Let's unpack it. you can still envision a world in which a principal is going to hear from parents about, you know, whatever was said. So I do think, you know, I give a lot of credit to social studies teachers who do try to engage issues and do try to get students to think critically about ideas. I don't think it's easy in this current environment.
No, I don't think it is either. Professor Kathleen Dolan is our guest, and this is All Things Political Tuesday edition on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number, and we have a line open if you'd like to join this conversation, 800-486-8655. Casey in Green Bay, hi.
Oh, good afternoon. Excellent topic, and I'd like to make a couple of comments, and I would take your response off the air. First off, when you're talking about academia and then young people not knowing, there's so many people, young people in our country have no idea what the Civil War was about in our country or who won it. And I do blame academia on that. They have no concept of how our country was founded or shaped. And I have to blame academia on that. But now I'll go right
to
the
Wait a second. Why would you blame academia on not knowing about the Civil War?
They don't teach it in school. I talk to people that are 20, 22, 24 years old. I said, who won World War One? They don't know. What was World War One about? They don't know. That World War One now, 100 years ago, is shaping the way our world acts today. It's almost reverted back to World War One history.
Do you see evidence that it's not being taught at all in schools, Professor Dolan?
No, certainly not. I mean, I have two high school students who go to public school here in Wisconsin, and I see what they've been learning, and I know that the Wisconsin standards are very similar across the state, so I would not think in any way that we are ignoring those topics. I do think that it is, you know, hard to control the education of any individual child and what he or she remembers. But I will say that I think that political science and related disciplines sometimes have trouble engaging people, and not just young people, but people in the importance of the ideas and what we study. You know, for all of this craziness about this presidential election, political science is not sexy. People would, you know, rather, as I always tell my students, watch the Dancing with the Stars marathon than they would engage in, you know, the learning that needs to go on. So people don't see government and politics as central to their lives sometimes. They don't see it as interesting and engaging. It certainly comes down their list of priorities in a pretty low position. But I think that there are lots of stakeholders, you know, to blame for that. I think, as I said before, we need to do a better job with all of our institutions.
Hmm. I thought everybody was watching The Apprentice.
Maybe.
Could be. Casey, thanks for your call. Richard in Madison, hi.
Hi. Your guest mentioned that Hillary Clinton's chances of winning depend on the ground game of getting African Americans and other minority groups. And hey, 22 states have passed laws with voter ID with the intent of suppressing those very voters. How is she going to win?
Professor Dolan.
Well, it is a good point for us all to acknowledge that the 2016 election will take place under more voter ID laws around the country than there were before. So we, at this point, don't know what will happen, certainly. Preliminary analyses from a couple of different states do suggest, as Democrats feared, that minorities and elderly voters are being disproportionately affected by the various voter ID laws. So what the party, I'm sure, is trying to do is get out, you know, as much voter information as is possible, try to get people to get IDs. But we do have to acknowledge, you know, that reality. It appears to be the case in some states, whether, you know, there are questions about intent of those laws and whether they were suppressive in their intention. But regardless of intention, right, on the ground, they may have that impact. And candidates will have to just try that much harder to get their voters out.
Yeah. Let's just, not that people can't keep calling in about the presidential election, please feel free, but there are a couple of other topics I wanted us to discuss. Governor Scott Walker was ordered by a judge to release his emails concerning this possible change of a mission statement, getting rid of the Wisconsin idea from the mission statement. He had argued that his emails were drafts. They weren't subject to the records law, and the judge said his proposal for withholding records untenably massive in scope. But what happened here is that we found out that the email showed his office had been told about the proposed changes, getting rid of the Wisconsin idea. What do you make of this? Is this just sort of forgotten now, or do we, again, remember this? Because people were pretty mad about this.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say that it came out on the weekend, you know, the coverage of the recently released emails, that it came out on the weekend and on a holiday weekend is not accidental and is not coincidental, probably. And it may have sort of denied a little bit of attention to the issue. I think it's, you know, going to be an issue certainly for progressives in the state who have been fighting for the UW system or in what they see as the best interest of the UW system. I do think there are, you know, lots of people in Wisconsin who agree with Governor Walker in terms of the sort of bit of antipathy toward public education and the public university system. I think that in that particular case, as with the attempts to change the open record laws, that the governor and the Republicans in the General Assembly underestimated the degree to which there was broader public support for the mission statement and the open records laws as they existed in Wisconsin. And you saw in both of those circumstances, you know, they touched the hot stove and they realized it and they pulled back immediately. So that the governor, you know, appears to be at the center of the efforts to change the mission statement, will that really affect a lot of people? People who already like the governor will not be affected by that. People who dislike the governor already dislike the governor. So I'm not sure that there's a big sort of downside for him. There may be, excuse me, some marginal, you know, gain in terms of people thinking, oh, you know, he clearly wasn't as straightforward with us on that issue as we thought. But I think at the end of the day, that's not a lasting negative for him.
Mm-hmm. And what about Hillary Clinton's emails? The Washington Post had a pretty scathing editorial headline, Clinton's inexcusable willful disregard for the rules. This issue is not going to go away. I'm not sure what's going to happen with the FBI report, if that will be released before the election. But it does dog her, doesn't it?
It does dog her, and it dogs her among people who are paying attention. So I think that it's a good example. You know, when I said a few minutes ago that people aren't paying attention yet and you know, were somewhat disbelieving of that, I think the emails is an issue, an example of an issue that matters much more to those of us who pay attention all the time. It matters much more to the media. I think the average American might know that Hillary Clinton has, you know, some email problem, as it were. I don't think most people are, you know, thick in the weeds of the data and the details on that. Certainly that she is not able to put it to rest is not a positive for her.
Mm-hmm.
I think her campaign will continue to focus on the ideas that she is not the first Secretary of State to behave this way. You know, I think part of it they will probably try to make some argument that part of it is partisan because the Republicans in the House have been particularly interested in moving this issue. So I think, you know, she will try to address it to the degree that she can. I think she will try to make it seem like a political issue to the degree that she can. And I think that, you know, for some voters, it just isn't on their radar and might not mean much.
Let's go next to Jake in Oshkosh. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I want to go back to a comment that an earlier caller made about people knowing nothing about World War One, Two, and the Civil War. That's been my experience as well. People are just absolutely ignorant about war in general in America, and in our wars today in the Middle East. They're absolutely ignorant about what's going on in the Middle East, why the war is going on, et cetera, et cetera. And I just want to call in and comment on that.
Well, who do you blame for that? I don't know anybody like that, so maybe I'm just living in a different kind of world. But we celebrated Memorial Day yesterday, which was about people who lost their
lives. That's exactly right. We celebrated Memorial Day. But I didn't hear anybody talking about World War One and Two and the Civil War and all the wars going on in the Middle East, about why are the wars being fought? Who's fighting them? Who's paying for them? There was no discussion at all yesterday about that. And it makes me very angry, because we are constantly at war with someone somewhere.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call. Well, they're not listening to public radio, because we certainly did a couple hours on this. And if you heard Prairie Home Companion this weekend, it was really an incredibly made-you-cry, moving show about wars, and took us through the Civil War and World War One and World War Two. It was very, very well done. I'm hearing this from people, but I'm sorry, but isn't the material out there? I remember learning about all of these wars when I was in school, and we all have family members who fought in some wars. Can we be as ignorant as people are portraying us, Professor Dolan?
Well, I don't have any public opinion polling at my fingertips about people's ability to, say who won World War One or what side were we on, or the Civil War, name some battles or something like that. I suspect if we had those sorts of things, people would score pretty low.
Hmm.
Again, I do believe that these things are being taught in school. But what people remember from 8th or 9th or 11th grade social studies doesn't necessarily carry them through life. Again, I'm going to, reiterate this point that it is not a priority for most Americans. Schools would argue that they are asked to do more with less all the time. So I think that the current situation we have is the sort of end result of the society into which we've evolved. I love Prairie Home Companion myself. I love the Kathleen Dunn Show. But, let's look at viewership and listenership ratings, and you're right. I mean, the vast majority of people don't listen to public radio, and they don't listen to Prairie Home Companion.
Mm-hmm.
So those sorts of things are always fighting in the arena of popular culture.
Oh, no, I'm just getting depressed. It's too bad. I don't know what people do instead. I can't imagine a life where you're not discussing all these issues, and it's what you talk about at the dinner table, and it's what informs your life in many ways. It beats reality TV, I think. Well, Jake, thanks very much for your call. Our phone number, by the way, is 800-486-8655. And we are doing a Tuesday All Things Political, because yesterday was Memorial Day, so we're doing this today. And welcoming your phone calls. We've been talking, of course, about the presidential race. We've gotten off on a subject I didn't think that we would be talking about, but how ill-informed we are, how people don't know about the wars in which we have participated, and just don't know much about history, I guess. And we have talked about Scott Walker and the Wisconsin Idea. We'll talk about what happened to the Syrian refugees who were supposed to come to the United States, and what is it that the world is supposed to do about all of these migrants dying in the Mediterranean? It just is a story that haunts you. Well, our phone number, I won't give it to you. Our lines are all humming. But you can also get a hold of us by going to talk@WPR.org. We're on Facebook, too. We love to read your comments on Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. John in Watertown is our next caller. Hello, John.
Hi. I'd like to make a comment in regard to Governor Walker. It seems to me, going back with Walker's administration, that he was part of a vanguard of conservative, I'll call it change revolution, even to that effect, in which they were trying to, I think, fundamentally change the United States back to their model of the 1800s or whatever. And I think with Governor Walker, with his emails about changing the progressive idea at the university, is just part of the whole thing since Act 10 of trying to change fundamentally Wisconsin's progressive movement. And I guess, to me, there has been no real discussion of the ultimate goals of what the conservatives are trying to do. I think Walker got elected, and he kept this secret. And I don't think there was any discussion. I think there's been this conservative movement, Paul Ryan's part of it, in which there's this idea of you've got to be an orthodox, you've got to believe these things, and there's a lack of compromise in the ideas. If you don't believe it, you're not a conservative, and so on. And I think this is the whole idea of the what is the ultimate conservative ideas of
vision. Okay, Professor Dolan, is there an ultimate vision?
I'm sure Governor Walker and the legislature believe that they have a vision. You know, I mean, what was articulated by the caller is certainly one side of the sort of very robust argument about what has Wisconsin been and where is Wisconsin going. And so you can certainly say that, you know, you can find progressives who believe that Governor Walker and the legislature are intentionally dedicated to sort of dismantling some of the kind of core things that people think of when they think of the Wisconsin idea broadly and the progressive roots of the state. And I think Governor Walker and the legislature would probably say in response that they have a vision for a, you know, more streamlined and less regulatory and you know, more economically successful state, whatever it is they believe. So I think that the issue here is not necessarily what the two sides are saying about the other, but what that we're having this conversation. I mean, I tell my students all the time, and, you know, I'll tell anybody who listens, that elections have consequences. And the, you know, election of a Republican governor and a Republican-controlled legislature has materially changed the direction of the state of Wisconsin. I don't think you can dispute that. Whether it's the right direction or the wrong direction is certainly a taste and flavor discussion. But the election brought new leadership, which made changes, and there are consequences of those changes. If you like them, you're happy. If you dislike them, you're not happy. But I think it returns to that central point that Todd, you know, made when he called in first earlier, is that people need to be informed, people need to be engaged, and people need to understand that elections are battles of differing ideas, and winners get to put their ideas into play.
Thanks, John, for your call. Sam in Madison, hi.
Hi. So I've got a little bit of a side as a younger person to what a couple of the callers earlier had talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the way that younger people, I obviously have a pretty strong history background. Well, I don't know if that's obvious, but I think that a lot of younger people my age, I'm 22, but a lot of people my age, knowledge is becoming external. So a lot of us, when asked on a topic that we aren't completely confident in, we'll just turn to our cell phone and look it up and figure it out instead of knowing it off the top of our head.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of older people are used to having to know things. I think a lot of people my age, and especially younger than me, don't have to know as much, so they don't know as much, and they'll formulate an opinion in 5 minutes by Googling. So I think that's a difference that a lot of older folk might not understand, and, you know, it is a little bit different, so I'll take your response.
Sam, before you go, do you find interesting and the campaign and political science interesting?
Yeah, I'd love to run for public office someday. I have an engineering degree, but I'd love someday to be a problem solver in politics as well.
All right, Sam.
So, yeah.
Good for you. Professor Dolan.
Well, I'm delighted that Sam called, but let's stipulate that Sam called into the public radio show in the middle of the day on a Tuesday.
Right.
So, of course, he's interested, and yay, and I wish there were more Sams. But what Sam's comment does speak to, though, is kind of an interesting sociological and probably anthropological discussion about the nature of information and the nature of sort of individual responsibility to carry that information. And I don't use responsibility in its negative connotations. But, I mean, Sam makes a good point, right? I mean, if you want to know something, we have immediate access to information in a way that we didn't before. So it may be, and I'm not a sociologist nor an anthropologist, but it may be that, you know, as human society evolves, we carry information differently, and we retain different kinds of information, and that we simply engage in interactions with the world in a different way. And that's, you know, possibly, you know, a sort of a human experience that's changing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sam, and go get them. Steve in Madison, hi.
Hi. I've been told to stay out of politics by my grandmother in the past, and looking up the word politics, I see it says use of intrigue or strategy in obtaining any position of power or control. And it sure appears to me that these candidates are looking for that power. That's the impression I have. I vote independent, but I can't fail to see the tremendous power that they're looking at, and it scares me. I sometimes feel like I'm that poor little kid in that gorilla cage regarding this election and what's going to happen. And, you know, these candidates that are running now are for sure going to make a big difference in our country. And I don't know if they're lost in the maze of the reality that so many of us are raised in a culture of murder.
All right. Thank you, Steve, very much for your call. Let's go to John next. We're running out of time. We want to get to all our callers. John in Milwaukee. Hi.
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 I wonder, Henry Ford one time said, history is the bunk. And I think he's right the way they teach it. I would ask for, I've talked to a lot of college students, and they don't seem to have any idea about conspiracy theories. They think they more or less have a vague feeling that it's all fiction and emotion and the bunk. And I was wondering, do the colleges teach any courses in conspiracy theories of conspiracies in history?
Professor Dillon?
That would depend on the college and university. I'm sure there are some. I can imagine history courses that focus on those sorts of things. I can imagine psychology courses where they look into the psychology of being interested in conspiracy theories. So certainly across the country, and probably even here in Wisconsin, there are people who teach that sort of thing, and I'm sure it comes up in political science classes sometimes, you know, debunking the fact that, you know, 9/11 was an inside job or something, you know, all those different sorts of things. So I'm sure those are treated in academic circles in some places.
Yeah, thanks for the call. We only have about a minute left, and I did want to talk about migration, all these people dying on these little boats in the Mediterranean, and then a story today that we said we were going to take in 10,000 Syrian refugees. We've taken in 2,500. The president's hosting this summit at the UN in September on this issue and getting some criticism for a lack of American leadership on dealing with this refugee problem. Deservedly so, criticism?
Well, certainly the pace of allowing refugees, particularly Syrian refugees, into the country has been much slower maybe than the president wanted or the president directed. You know, and this is the classic balance of security versus open borders. So the process of screening and vetting under that refugees undergo is long, and our federal government system is complex and bureaucratic, and there are lots of different agencies that have, you know, a part to play in this. So it does take a long time, I think, to meet the standard of security that has been established before we allow refugees into the country. I think the United States, you know, must be still the greatest recipient of refugees from around the country, and we're certainly one of the people, one of the nations giving the greatest amount of money to assist. So is anybody's house clean? Probably not perfect, but I don't think any country is willing to just open its borders and let people in without a thorough vetting process. And unfortunately, in the United States, that process has become pretty cumbersome.
Yeah. Professor Dillon, thank you. Always a pleasure to speak with you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Professor Kathleen Dolan, professor and chair of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, our guest for All Things Political for this Tuesday. Usually Mondays, but today, Tuesday. Thanks very much to KP Whaley for producing the hour and to KP for doing on-air production here in Milwaukee. Today, we're going to be talking about Hour 2, the federal trial on Wisconsin's voting laws that just ended last week. It was a 9-day trial, and it looks at voting policies, including voter ID, whether or not it's put a disproportionate burden on minorities and young people. That's the focus of our conversation, Hour 2. We hope you'll stay with us.